Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome to episode 334 of the Spearhead Sundays podcast. Very special tracksuit edition featuring my good friend Greeley. Welcome back to the show.
Hey!
Welcome back.
It's fucking good to be back, mate.
Yes.
The old Spearhead Sundays.
Yes.
It's been a while.
Fan favorite guest. Yeah. This is the tracksuit edition of the show.
Yeah, mate.
And this might be the first episode of the podcast I've ever done where me looking side on at the guest, I actually have a chin visible, which is pretty good.
Yeah, fuck yeah. You showed me some before and after photos, but it didn't have a silhouette. You have to have a, like, of what your silhouette, like with the shadow on the background, what it looks like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One of those old timey photos.
Yeah. But now just with a nice protruding chin.
Yeah.
Oh, bro, it's fucking wonderful to be here. Man, you've come so far on your journey over the last couple years. Just in life, bro. I think back to when we did the tour together and, you know, us, well, you not being really aware of how unhealthy you were.
That tour, the Independent Variable tour, was my fourth tour, and probably that was when I started to become quite sick, and I just had no idea. I just thought, oh, I'm becoming more successful. I'm working tired. Hard, so of course I'm going to be a bit more tired.
Yeah.
And that was when it was, like, in my head at least, a reasonable level of exhausted.
Mm.
But it just never went away, and it just got worse.
And, yeah, even just your, like, the energy in your face that you carry now, it's different, bro. Mm. It's really different. So it's like, yeah, what a journey, my bro. I'm so proud of you for getting through it all. It's a lot of fucking so many different shifts you went through in regards to just not only your personal growth, your health growth, your physical growth, everything, man.
Yeah. It's been a very big journey.
It has, man. And, like, for myself as well, when I think back to, you know, our connection and also the time when this podcast, like, from when, fuck, the first podcast you and I did, we were recording it on a phone in a car in a housing commission area in Tasmania.
Fuck, that's true. Was that even filmed or was it just audio?
It was just audio. We recorded it on your phone and we sat in the car because we were like, oh, it'll be dead. There's a good booth sitting in the car.
Yeah.
It's the best we had. It was just using someone else's car as a fucking podcast booth.
Yeah, that's right. Man, I forgot that we did that. That's so...
Yeah
this podcast has come a long way.
It has.
Like, every time you and me do an episode together, both of us have changed a lot.
Mm.
Sometimes for the worse, sometimes for the better.
Yeah, but it all had to get worse for it to get better, man.
And yeah, I think 100%. It's like when, like, talking about that tour that you and I did, that was probably when it, right before it kind of got quite bad for the two of us. Mm. You ended up in prison. Yeah. I ended up in lockdowns and going through my own health stuff as well.
Yeah.
And now the pods that we've done since has been, like, kind of coming out of that and growing from that.
Yeah, man, it really has. There's so many different ways.
Yeah.
So, yeah, man, it's exciting.
It is.
This is, like, the next level.
This is,
like, I feel like we've both recalibrated ourselves in different ways.
Yeah.
We've both realigned with our kind of purpose of what we're doing. And
Yeah, we talk about this all the time of, like, how all the stuff that we've, like, endured and grown from and been through has really just kind of, I feel like for me that this is the first time in a really long time where I'm like, oh my God, I actually can kind of see 5 years in the future and I can kind of have a vague plan to work towards with that. Whereas before, when I was sick and lockdowns and like kind of bullshit, I was like, oh man, if I can get to next week, that'd be awesome.
Yeah, bro. Yeah, same here, man. Like, especially the last year of my life has really been a big journey for me, and to be back here, coincidentally at this time, I'm living in Melbourne at the moment.
Yeah.
I've been making music again, I've been doing battles, I've been doing everything that I've always done, but for different reasons. Like, it's been 14 years since I first came to Melbourne to do a rap battle. You know, I lived in Melbourne, signed to a record label, I've done all the things.
Yeah.
And thought I was doing all the things right, but it never worked out well.
Mm.
It always ended up somehow with me feeling fucked over or something going wrong.
Mm.
Whereas now I'm moving for a different energy and moving. I'm not results driven.
Yeah.
It's interesting. I've just changed, I guess, the laws of attraction around how I'm moving. And now it's all just coming towards me in the best of ways, man. And I just see you're in a very similar position, bro. Like, both of us have really spent a lot of years not only building ourselves, but building people around us. You know, I know that through what I did through the hip hop culture, you really admired, and I watched you do it through the comedy culture as well. We're both movers and shakers like that. And we both also, we like the grand scheme of things. We like to build up people around us.
Yes.
Which has, you know, sometimes worked well for us. Sometimes it's worked against us. But yeah, to be where we're at right now, to know where you're at, to know where I'm at, and just to be back here, man, it's a fucking honor. It's a blessing. It's such a celebration in every way. So yeah.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. It's good. It's, I think like, I think the longer you work in entertainment, especially, you can kind of get sucked into two different paths, which is like money and numbers online or sales, or like just creating to become a better artist and a more honest artist and become like much, much better at the craft. And that's kind of, I feel like everyone starts off just being like money, fans, this and that. And then the love of the actual art form itself can kind of get lost
100%.
In that. And then you see a lot of people burn out or crash and burn, and then they get more excited by drugs and alcohol than they do money or fame or the art itself. But like what I've kind of really, really understood is that money and fans is actually just kind of like a byproduct and a side effect of being a really good artist.
Yeah.
And that's always what you should be chasing.
100%, man. That's exactly it. Yeah, I've lived a life where, you know, I was living for the next gig. You know, I was gigging as a way of making ends meet. And, yeah, that took the love right out of that, you know. And for me, it's like really getting back to just doing what I love. And I don't care about the rest. So long as if I've got enough to survive, the rest of it's pointless for me.
You know?
And I think, yeah, we're at an interesting time in the world where we can see a lot of shit for how it is. And I think finding your happy place during this chaos is the most important thing.
Yeah.
Wherever that happy place may be, we're so, once again, lucky and blessed to be where we're at. And we need to make the most of it and give love to the world every day through doing what we do, you know?
Yeah.
And, like, I think our creative element, not only as we share sincerely with people and try and... The most important thing in this time of living is empowering, I think.
Yeah.
Is empowering, you know, the right people. It's very interesting, bro.
Yeah, it's like empowering yourself and then pointing other people in the correct direction rather than trying to... And this can be this like relationships as well. Like you can't fix your girlfriend. You can't fix your boyfriend.
Yeah.
You can point them in the right direction and give them access to resources and assist them in healing themselves. And that's the same thing is true of everything. It's like, it's you need to figure out how to empower yourself and kind of use that to after you've empowered yourself, which is a really, that takes a long time in figuring yourself out and figuring out your own health. I mean, I only just became healthy 3 weeks ago when I got my braces off. For the first time in my life, I'm 30. And I'm like, oh my God, I'm fucking here. And now I've noticed so many people around me, people that I know personally, but then also after all these Melbourne shows, so many people are coming up to me and being like, man, I've started taking my health seriously. I've started actually going to doctors and chasing this shit up. Or, man, I had no idea that I had horrible sleep apnea. That's why I'm depressed. That's why I'm fatigued. And that's why I feel like shit. That's why I'm fat. That's why I can't put on weight because I'm not sleeping properly. And it's like, oh, yeah, there's no way I could have fixed that for these people. But me kind of sharing my own journey and being honest about the struggles of it and keeping people updated on the process, I've actually inspired a fuckload of people to resolve that, the same issue that I had that they had no idea that they had, but then also other people being like, oh man, I had this completely other unrelated thing. And I saw you go through all that years of fixing your thing and coming out the other end. It's inspired me to actually take control and try and fix this other thing that I had.
Yeah, man. It's about looking inwards and like all self-work, whether it be like, you know, physical health, whether it be mental health or spiritual health.
Yeah.
It's all about looking inwards and we're in an external world where everything's given to us externally. you know, everything that's marketed to us. Pretty much a lot of humans are just byproducts of marketing, really. Yeah. You know, yeah. And we're so deep in that psyche of it that it's very hard to break free from it.
Well, I think like it's just like the first thing that most people do the second they wake up is they reach for their phone because that's their alarm, and then they turn the alarm off and now they're on social media and it's just like other people's thoughts and agendas going straight into your fucking brain before you've even had a chance to realize that you're human and alive.
Yeah, fucking
nice. It's like you just wake up and you're like, what do other people think? That's what I'm going to absorb. Yeah, yeah. And then you know, you open up your phone, you're scrolling, you're like, fuck, I just watched six people die. Ah, it's Monday. I have to go to work.
Oh, it's full on, man. It's very full on. Yeah, so interesting, bro. Yeah, I just got back from Tassie. I just went down and did the In the Hood tour with Spanion.
Yes. This has been going crazy all over social media. If you don't know who Spanion is, he's like a guy who kind of blew up online by just talking about his crim past on Instagram, doing things called hood talks and hood knowledge and just talking about all the crimes that he personally committed, what he learned from it, without being remorseful about it or shying from it. He was just exceedingly honest. He kind of blew up, and of course this happens in Australia, he blew up, everyone fucking hated him, and then he kept doing it. Now everyone, then he became successful, and now people are like, actually we really like him. And he runs a very successful YouTube channel now.
It's because Australia is still just a bunch of convicts that are lying to themselves. This is what I say, that whole reflection of like, hey, we don't like this.
Yeah.
As like a reflection of the deep subconscious that is the criminal beginning of what Australia is.
Yeah.
And they're like, hey, this is triggering. But then once they get past their trigger, they're like, yeah, we actually like him because
it's a horrible cultural cringe that we have in Australia. And it's every single type of it's everything. Like anyone who becomes successful in anything in this country kind of goes through a pretty big period of hate from fellow Australians.
Oh, so true.
Until they start to kind of make it, and then they're like begrudgingly accepted, but they're not fully accepted until Americans really like them, and then they get embraced. It's a really interesting thing.
I remember when it
happened with Australian rap, the genre.
Yeah.
Now it's quite accepted because like you've got people like 1-4 and big drill rappers that are blowing up in the States and in the UK. So it's not lame and it's not cringe.
Yeah.
And now it's an accepted part of culture. It happened with me when I first started in 2012. Me and all of the other online comics were railed against by traditional comedians, but then also a lot of people were like I remember having a YouTube channel when I started, one was like, fucking lame, and how dare you start one. Now everyone's got a TikTok and a bunch of like these comics, you know, myself included, have blown up internationally, now it's very accepted, and it's a really interesting thing that is feels fairly unique to Australian culture that I see talked about all the time on TikTok as well.
Yeah,
from foreigners.
Yeah.
Which is fascinating.
They know we do it. It's because it's fuck, man. Australia's got such an ego issue. It's like I did this like cipher not long ago, and there was a guy on there. He was a white Australian. He's like, he did the whole Oz accent's the best, and it just like knowing what I know now and having the experience I've got across all of Australia, I was like, what do you mean Oz accent? What is an Oz accent?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, are you talking about the handed down sixth generation convict English accent?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, what is the Oz accent? And how the fuck do you think it's the best?
Yeah.
What do you mean the best? The best is subjective.
Yeah.
How is these fucking people on an isolated large bit of desert at the bottom of the world, our accents are the best? Like, It's
super subjective. Like when I walk around here and I talk the way that I talk, no one doesn't turn any heads.
Yeah.
No one thinks that I'm sexy for speaking. But when I was in New York, I would speak and people would be like, this guy's cool. He's interesting. Wow. Mm. It's different. I want to know more about, I'm the same person,
maybe
but you're
that's
in a different
Oz accent's the environment. Best, 'cause New York reckons.
Exactly. Yeah. It's such a funny thing. Like I see a lot on TikTok, just like international travelers that come to Australia will talk about they'll be like, oh, I've noticed this, and they explain all of these things that they've never experienced before, and I'm watching it going, oh yeah, that's like, that's tall poppy syndrome in Australia of like, you know, the tallest nail gets hit down,
yeah,
all that kind of shit. That's very, very natural and normal in this country, but other people come over and it's weird. Like when I went to the States, I had the like several of the weirdest conversations ever with Americans I've never met. And the conversations were, what do you want to do? Like, what's your dream? And I go, oh, I want to do this. And they go, wow, that's so cool. I could see you doing that. Here's my crazy dream that's ridiculous and impossible. I'm going to try and do this. I'm going, fuck, I've never had these conversations in Australia of like people sharing their dreams and then going, I believe you can do it, and here's what I want to do. It's really interesting that there's like this whole thing in Australia of like, oh, you wanna be something, so you think you're better than me? No, I wasn't even really thinking about you when I decided I wanted to be a comedian or a painter or it's whatever
such,
the fuck.
It's such a like a bit of an ego-driven kind of perspective. I really learned from my time in America as a teenager all this sort of stuff. Because I grew up in Tassie.
A lot of people don't know this about Greeley, but you're an American.
Yeah, I was born in America, and I went back and forth a bunch of times growing up. And so, yeah, I got to do a bit of high school in America, and that really taught me just a lot about the attitude. And, yeah, you know, like in Tassie, when I was doing hip-hop, everyone would laugh at me and point at me, you know, what a dickhead, you know what I mean? And then at school in America, as soon as they found out that I could beatbox and I was doing it, they're like,
show us.
Yeah, show us. Come be a part of it.
Isn't that weird?
Know? And yeah, then they convinced me to start rap. My first ever rap I did was at school in Texas. So they were like, only beatbox. And they're like, no, you can rap. You know what I mean? They empowered me. And then I started rapping. Then I got back into Tasmania where everyone was like, you can't rap. You know what I mean? So like literally the guys at school in America were like, you can do this. And then I got back home to Kingston High, Tasmania, and they were like, fucking dickhead. You know what I mean? Like,
I remember in year 12 in high school, I had just, I think it was the second half of year of 2012, I just started making stuff on Facebook and YouTube. Fucking Facebook and Facebook. That's when I started. But I was anonymous at the time until I finished high school. But I remember there was this other kid who started a YouTube channel, just gaming videos, like nothing special, just like having fun with his brother playing Mario Kart. And people found out about it. And me and my friend group, I found out about it, and I would watch them, and I'd go, oh, this is cool. And then I kind of told him, like, I think this is cool. I've seen it. And he was, like, really weirded out that people found out about it. But then the rest of the school found out about it. I told him it was cool. They bullied him.
Yeah.
He deleted it within a week.
Wow.
And
bless him.
That could have been the next PewDiePie. It was 2012.
Yeah, true.
Do you know what I mean? Like, he was early. I didn't even know you could record gameplay. He was doing it. Australians bullied him out of it. And it's a fascinating thing. But then there's talking about the American one's not all good because they kind of have the opposite problem to us where it's like, oh, you don't want to be exemplary? What are you, a fucking loser?
Yeah.
Oh, you're poor? That's your fault.
Yeah,
you're homeless? You should just be rich instead. You know, everyone can do it. That's the opposite end
It's like toxic positivity.
Like we have, oh, you want to be a rich, successful person? You think you're better than me? And then other people in the States are like, oh, you don't want to be rich and successful? You must be a fucking loser. It's like the opposite.
It's crazy.
There's positives and negatives to both.
It's very interesting, man. Because, yeah, especially after this time with Spaniard down in Tassie, I've copped heaps of hate. I'm copping more hate than I've ever copped in years.
Well, tell us what happened. So Spaniard has a video series on his YouTube channel where he does walking tours of dangerous, scary hoods.
He goes to the
around
notorious
the world.
Spots. You know, he goes to the notorious spots around the world. He's done all of Europe.
Yeah.
He's done some crazy ghettos in Greece, you know, all sorts of things.
Oh, the
like
ones
that.
In Europe are scary as fuck. Yeah. Like just people just doing heroin in the street. He's walking past robberies and
straight
stuff
up.
Like that. And
man, like this, this country doesn't realize how good it is. You know, I've got my Greek friend Stavros. He's like, bro, why everyone complain here, bro?
Yeah.
Because he grew up in the fucking hood in Athens with that shit. You know what I mean? Like, it's so much more violent, so much more extreme. You know?
Yes.
Spaniard hit me up and he wanted to come down to Tassie and do his In the Hood tour.
I want to do one in Frankston with him.
Yeah. That'd be amazing, man.
Yeah.
It'd be, very good. And so, yeah, he wanted to go to Glenorchy, Bridgewater, and Gagebrook. And he hit me up, and he hit up another rapper that lives in Glenorchy, Wombat, and told us to keep it quiet. And so we kept it pretty quiet. You know, I hit up one local fella from one of the areas because he's not only also a rapper that's a part of THC, which is the hip-hop platform. That
the Tassie Hip-Hop Collective?
Yeah, Tassie Hip-Hop Collective. And, you know, that I've helped push on YouTube and really, really try and empower local artists in Tassie. But he's also from the area. He's had a life that represents the area. You know, he grew up in those. He's a you know, a product of his environment. And so that was the only kind of person I reached out to. But Tassie is so small. People don't understand how small Tassie is, how interconnected it is, especially when it comes to Snapchat, Instagram, things like that, you know.
Tassie is just one group chat.
It really is one big group chat. That's a good way to put it, you know. So not only...
Because I lived there for a little bit and I could not believe how many people I kept seeing like multiple times a week.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I would bump into a stranger and then I would learn their name. Like the guy cut my hair.
Yeah.
I got cut my hair in Melbourne. I would never see him ever again in my fucking life unless I went to his barbershop and booked him by name.
Yeah.
But in Tassie, I got my hair cut once and then I saw him about four times.
Yeah, you go to the shop, there he is getting dinner.
He's just there.
Yeah.
I meet a fan, they lose their mind, and then I see them 2 days later. They lose their mind again, and then I see them next week. Hey, mate. Hey, mate.
Yeah, yeah. And then it just comes normalized.
And then you just see them all the time. It's a group chat. You're there all the time and chatting to people. Hello. Hi. Hi. Yeah,
which is an interesting thing being like, for me, like I'm a well-known person in Tassie, and I have been for a while. And it's interesting because people are that close, they have to see you on that normal level.
Yes.
And the whole idea of being
the mystique goes away.
Yeah, yeah. The celebrity thing is like, oh, wow, look at there he is. And then they realize he's just a fucking normal person like everyone is.
Yeah.
And then they're like, oh, I don't know why people look. And then the tall poppy syndrome kicks in. Like, oh, well, he's just another person. He gets.
Yeah, I don't know why people like him. He's just another guy. Yeah. It's like, yeah, dude. And so is every other person. There's nothing special about any of them other than they happen to be particularly good at the skill that they release. And then everything else is just like smoke and mirrors and mystique that often is completely out of the famous person's control.
Oh, exactly, man. And as soon as, well, like we did the tour on the Saturday, the In Hood tour, you know, and I'd organised to meet with Spanion just outside a KFC on the side of the main road. It was full like random drop parachute shit. Like, all right, bro, I'll fucking meet exactly dropping this. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I just like, you got a lift to that one spot, jumped off, he got off the bus, there we went. You know what I mean? I'd organised to have a chat with a fella called Wayne Howlett, and he's pretty very well known in Tassie. He's a world champion heavyweight lifter when it comes to weights, but he's also
big boy.
Yeah, he's a big fella, and but he's also he's been in and out of the system. He kind of grew up in the streets in Tassie, and he's a very intelligent, articulate guy.
Yeah,
especially for the life that he's come from. So I thought it'd be perfect to for him to have a chat with Spanion. I've watched Wayne help motivate so many people into turning their lives away from the street and from crime. He's always focused on sports and that. So I thought, this is good. And and so we just did it, man. But as soon as the night before, when Spanion got to Tassie and he put on his Instagram, I'm in Hobart, every single one of his followers just were on fire. Everyone was searching for him. My phone started going nuts.
If you see that Spanion's in Tasmania, you're like, he's definitely going to go to Bridgewater at some point.
Yeah, well,
you just figure it out.
As soon as he landed, people were driving down from Devonport.
Wow.
You know what I mean? Like, there's not much.
Yeah, he's become Hood Jesus. It's crazy.
He really is. Like,
which he would refute profusely.
Well, title.
But
the thing is, like, you have to give it to God. And this is when the blessings come in, you have to give it, like, this is the problem with humans. They think they're gods. And as soon as when humans get too carried away with their power and they go into the fact that they think, oh, no, I'm a god, it's me. It's not. If the power's working through you, when you're allowing Jesus to walk through you, like there was this moment during the vlog.
Spanion's very, very religious.
He is, yeah. And,
I don't know if he was always like that. Or if it's recent to him, or if he's just recently become very vocal about it.
Well, he has. I think, he really, Jesus for him is how he changed his life around. He had one moment where he was in jail, where Jesus spoke to him. He looked in the mirror and he went, "What the fuck am I doing?"
So this is why I want to read his book. You can't get his book anywhere because the publishers have pulled it.
Yeah, fully.
I imagine this is in his book.
Yeah, and it was a similar moment for me, man. Like, for me, it wasn't Jesus because I still haven't come to terms with that word at that point.
Yeah.
But for me, I had this moment of like, if I love myself properly, everything in my life can be good.
Yeah.
And that's what God is. God is unconditional love. And when you find God, it's finding unconditional love for yourself.
Yeah.
And because God is forgiveness.
Mm.
And when you've had a hard life where you've made fucking mistakes like Spanion has and like I have,
yeah.
We've got, you know.
Like everybody has.
Like everybody has. Sometimes it takes more extreme mistakes for you to have to find that forgiveness even harder.
Mm.
Like for me, I nearly killed someone. I put them in a coma.
Yeah.
And I felt guilt and I felt a lot of people looking down at me from it. So for me to free myself from other people's judgment, I had to forgive myself.
Yes.
And the idea of what God is and finding God and repenting my sins helped me forgive myself because I believe God is inside us. I believe Jesus is inside us. And well, I think Spanion does too.
That idea is so much more Jesus than what most churches and priests practice. Like if you read the Bible and you have a look at what Jesus actually did, even if you don't believe that he's the Son of God, or if you believe that he was just like a really nice guy that truly believed he was the Son of God, if you look at what he actually did that witnesses have seen, he hung out with prostitutes, with lepers, with criminals. And there's quotes of him saying that like a rich man has a better chance of getting into heaven than fitting through the eye of a needle, you know, like all of this, or a better chance of fitting through the eye of the needle than he does getting into heaven, like all of this stuff of like, he was there to save people and forgive people. And how do you forgive a perfect person, who needs forgiveness the most? It's the person that's made the most mistakes.
100%. And I learned this in jail that, like, you know, fucking being morally confronted, being around people that have done stuff that I fucking don't agree with, but I had to learn that only God could judge.
Yeah, because when you commit a violent offense, you go in with the murderers. There's not really a scale for violent offense. You go in with them.
It's all in one, really. Yeah. In the prison system, everyone's in there.
So
it just depends on the culture around it. But it's crazy, bro. When I look at what God is, and the more that I understand God, the more I develop a closer relationship to God. And for me, I'm developing a closer relationship with all of it, you know. I know Spanion, for example, is like, Jesus Christ is the only way. But I had the feeling of Jesus before I understood Jesus.
Yeah.
And like, I think cultures and I think ideology and humans trying to argue their experience with other humans is where the problematic aspect of all this shit comes into
it. Yes. Yeah.
But man, like through the whole vlog, and you know, once again, I met up with Spanion outside KFC. We walked through Glenorchy. A fan pulled up and was like, what are you doing? And we're like, we got to go to Gagebrook. So he's like, I'll give you the lift.
Yeah.
Like, we just jumped in a random guy's car. It wasn't fucking planned.
Yeah.
And he was like, sweet as, bro. You know what I mean? Like, me and Wombat barely could fit in the back.
Yeah.
And then we went to Gagebrook. We got there. There was probably about 30 or 40 people there when we got there, you know, all hanging around the local shop.
Yeah.
And
were they coincidentally there, or did they have a feeling Spanion would show up?
Well, the guy that I'd organized to meet, who was a rapper called Muzi.
Because if you're in Tassie, there's only really like three, if he's doing a hood tour, there's only really like three suburbs or so that he's definitely going
to
hit.
There's three sides of town.
Yeah.
There's like the northern suburbs, there's the eastern shore, and
then
there's down south in Kingston where I grew up.
Yeah.
And in those little areas, there's probably like four suburbs to that area. You know, like you've got Bridgewater, Gagebrook, Herdsman's Cove, you know. But the Eastern Shore, you got like Clarendon Vale, Rokeby, Risdon Vale, similar things, all segregated houseo sort of communities within the hills. And but they definitely knew he was coming. Because the thing is, when we got to Glenorchy at about 11:30, there was all the kids in Glenorchy, they got a photo, they put it up. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, over. Yeah. Everyone knows he's out.
Yeah.
Every youth with a dirt bike is there, you know.
I want to be in the video.
Looking for someone to take a selfie, look in the background. Oh, yep, that's engaged book. He's there now. They're down 5 minutes.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it's
Tassie's small.
And so, yeah, everyone, man, like, I've had people be like, oh, I saw you put up a status saying we'll be at Gagebrook in half an hour. That never happened. People say, like, oh, you did this, you did that. None of that shit happened. I was too busy trying to fucking info dump to Spanion the whole time about convict history of Tasmania.
Yeah.
You know, like, I wasn't worried about people being there. I was more worried about getting my info dump ridiculous rabbit hole knowledge of Tasmania out. I talked on that camera for 5 hours. The vlog went for half an hour. his poor editor went through some shit. Yeah. I'll tell you that much. Like, yeah, shout out to Spanion's editor. He went through a lot.
A mission. Yeah,
and he had to cut a lot out. He would have fucking, he'd have PTSD from the stories I told him that. It was hectic.
Yeah.
So many fucking random, you know, fuck. There was so much cut out that, would have upset the apple cart even more. I was talking about deep police corruption. I was talking about satanic rituals at Mona. I was talking about all the weird shit that they, you know, sprinkle up and make look cool to hide the fact it's fucking dark and weird. But yeah, you know, I was hoping that got in there because, fuck, I wouldn't have minded stirring some of that shit up. But at the end of the day, man, it was just fucking positive. We went out to Gagebrook. Yeah. Everyone was there that was stoked. I know these communities. I've known these communities for a long time. You know, I saw the mother of a child whose father was a big fan of mine who got murdered while I was in prison, and I wrote a song about him. I haven't seen her since that happened. Do you know what I mean? Like, I saw so many teenagers whose dads and uncles I knew from prison that are, you know, really kind of kids that have had it rough and they haven't got their, you know, fathers around or this or that, you know. So to see those kids that happy.
Yeah.
And I walk past these kids every day in the fucking mall watching them getting picked on by the cops. They're not happy kids. And I don't blame them for the chip on their shoulders, because I used to have the same chip on my shoulder.
Yeah.
Because I was growing up in an environment that didn't really understand me or support me, and I didn't feel loved because my dad wasn't there, you know. And so to see Spanion in those environments and to be there myself, connecting with the community. And the thing is, because Tassie's so small, yeah, this community is so used to me. There's a lot of people that just hate me because they're used to me. I talk a lot and they're just like, oh, fucking Greeley's talking again. Fucking dickhead. You know, like, I've got heaps of that tall poppy syndrome.
Yeah.
So to be back there and going, seeing even guys that I know probably think I'm a bit of a dickhead, we go, hey, Spanion's here. And they're like, oh, fuck. You know what I mean? It was just so positive. You know, the worst thing, I think that's
what's really, Spanion gets a lot of hate because he talks about his past, but what he's actually able to do because of his past and the mistakes that he's made and grown from is he can actually show an alternate path to people who are still doing that shit or who feel like they want to start doing that shit.
That's the most important thing, man. Yeah. For every person that wants to judge me on the internet, like they have been in the last week,
yeah,
if I can use the fact that I was in Spanion's vlog,
yeah,
to help connect with a young fella who's 16 years old, who might be starting a life of crime, who is already breaking into construction sites, he's already living on the streets, he's already getting on ice with his mates because he thinks that's what he needs to do.
Yeah.
And then one of his mates went and bashed a cop with a hammer. This is a real story.
Yeah.
But now because he knows that I'm friends with Spanion and he looks up to Spanion and he's now listening to me, That same kid has gone back to school. He's gone back to grade 10. He's apologized to his nan for the trouble he's caused. He's reconnected with his nan. And now he's moving back in with his dad.
Yeah. And that's
6 months ago, beautiful. He was on the street.
Yeah.
Two steps away from going to jail. His best mate just went to jail for bashing a cop with a hammer.
Yeah.
And he was hitting me up like, how do I talk to my friend in prison? I'm like, you can't really, bro. You have to wait for them to put you on the list and blah, 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 blah. And he's going, fuck, I didn't realize it was this hard. And I'm like, yeah, bro. Prison sucks.
It's not fun.
If your friends go to prison, it's going to be hard to stay friends with them unless you go to prison too. And this is what happens.
Yeah, I visited you in prison twice. It fucking sucked.
Yeah, it's fucking hard. It sucked.
Sending you letters, it's really difficult. Mm. I wasn't even there.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's really hard.
100%. And that's when you're in there and everyone's, how can I talk to you? It's like, wait. You know, I've got to put your number on the list and then have to get and then in 3 weeks, once I spend $6 per phone call to give you a call for 10 minutes, you know what I mean? It's a mission, man. And
I think to point out something like, lot of people hear stuff like that about you influencing this kid and helping him fix his life up. A lot of people just kind of think, oh, he saved this kid.
Mm.
Yes. But also think of how much harm you've prevented to other people.
100%.
That's what it is. And like I've talked about it a lot. I've been a foster father and took my son in, and it's like what I've kind of taken away from it and all the shit that I've been through and seeing a lot of harm committed to a lot of people close to me in my life is the only response. There's two ways to respond to it, and that is to fucking embrace that darkness and continue the harm that you see and put it out there in the world.
Mm.
Or it's to respond with love and kind of where I've kind of landed on, especially for men, is you have to be a good man, which is really hard. And and being a good man is not the absence of causing harm. Mm. That's being a neutral observer. Being a good man is actually noticing the opportunities to do good and taking that up and doing it. And that's really hard to do because you can often do that at the expense of yourself.
Yeah,
for sure. You see that happen all the time where people help others to death and then they have nothing left and they burn out. But kind of what I've learned from my whole experience and like helping people, but then also seeing like the effects of people who were never helped in their life, harming other people. It's like, fuck, if there was like a good man in that person's life, maybe all of this shit could have been prevented. So much harm and evilness is committed in the world because a father wasn't there, or a father was there and he was abusive, or you know.
I think, well, man, like even the culture around, especially with men and women, you know, like
well, there's an awful violence against women culture problem here in Australia,
massively. But there's also comes with it's an objectification as well, you know. Yeah. Like there's a massive. I've noticed it massively in the hip hop scene because there is so much misogyny that comes with it.
Yeah.
And you know, I've really, for who I am in the hip hop scene, I try and support a lot of female artists in the hip hop scene, authentically in the right way, because you know, and even chat with some of these wonderful women that are talented artists.
Yeah.
And they're so used to people trying to show them kindness in the way of trying to take something from them. You know what I mean? And the more I like support and I'm just like, I don't want nothing from you. I'm trying to uplift you. You know what I mean? I can watch how much they're like, what the fuck? Which is a massive sign of how culturally acceptable this shit is.
Mm.
And there's this thing with Spanion. You know, he says, yeah, ad lay, blah, 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 and talks about crimes that he did. But Spanion's a married man.
Mm.
He goes to the gym. He doesn't take drugs or drink alcohol. He doesn't promote misogyny. He's not promoting women in, you know, G-strings and all this sort of shit. No, he's like actually a fucking good role model.
Yeah.
For where he's at in life. He's living a very fucking good life. And this is the thing. I think back when I first saw Spanion, when he just got out, he was still fucking carrying all this armor, this protection that he developed over years of having to protect himself in jail, on the street, everything.
Yeah.
When I was walking with him through the hood and you'd see, you know, a mum with her two daughters come up, could I please get a photo? And Spain would be like, yeah, like he's a really kind.
Mm.
Like he's healed so much. Spanion's healing journey is one of the most powerful things that this country has been able to witness. Because we're talking about a guy who was an extreme, it can be very dangerous.
Yeah.
He has no fear. You know, I'd heard of Spanion before he got to the internet, you know what I mean? And he was pretty renowned and notorious, which a lot of, like, I've got heaps of mates like him. My mate Kane, you know, Kane is a very similar guy to Spanion. Kane has served 15 years in jail by the time he was 30 years old.
Half his life.
From the age of 11 to 30, he'd spent, in 19 years of his life, he'd spent a total of 15 locked up.
Fuck.
And you know, and I, and like, once again, when I say I help people, I'm not trying to take responsibility or take fucking whatever. I'm not trying to say it's me. I'm the magic person. For me to help anyone, they have to want to help themselves.
You can be a positive example.
This is what I learned from America, is that empowering.
Yeah.
Bah, 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 bah.
Yeah.
And that's what I do to people. I go, you can do this.
Yes.
You can do this. Don't let the tall poppy syndrome fucking get in the way.
Yeah.
Don't think, oh, yeah, whatever. It's just a fucking dream. Like,
yeah.
When I met Kane in jail, some of his best mates were like, Kane will never fucking be a rapper. Kane's dropping a single today with TKO.
Sick.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, that's fucking 4.5 years.
Mm.
And he's dropping a track with one of the biggest street rappers in Australia.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? He's gone from being told not possible to absolute reality in four or five years, you know?
Yeah.
And so, and that's what I do. I just fucking info dump and empower people. And I always try and like be articulate in the way that I acknowledge all the fears and doubts and all this sort of stuff, but then bring it back to the empowerment. And yet, Kane has now not been in jail for 5 years. When Kane was a criminal, if you Google him,
he's a scary motherfucker.
Yeah, but aside from that, he was just like, he had no other ladder to climb.
Of course.
He had no other opportunities to really fit into for where he was at when he was young. So he went, I'm going to be the best at what I do, which was crime.
Yeah.
And, you know, Kane had seizures, not seizures, but a siege when all the cops rocked up and Kane was on top of the house. He's lobbing bricks. He set his own house on fire. The amount of tax money that Kane Richardson cost Tasmania was a lot.
Yeah.
5 years.
That's why you guys didn't have an AFL team for so long.
Yeah, Kane Richardson.
They could have built a stadium off that.
No, true, true. But man, like he has not fucking cost the taxpayers any money since.
I've met him. I think once, maybe twice, but just the obvious turnaround that I've seen, and I'm a stranger to him, but it's very obvious to me. And I think that's the power of being a good man is actually being able to lead by example,
just believing in yourself,
and grab someone's hand and go, you come with me, you can do it. And that's not doing it for them. That's not fixing them. That's just showing them an alternative and then giving them access to some tools.
100%.
And then going, I believe in you. And that's like so fucking powerful, especially with men, because there are so many men out there that don't have dads, or that they do, they've got bad dads, or they come from bad families, or they've only ever had bad male examples.
Yeah,
and a lot of that comes out, and it's all passed down. And a lot of that comes out in violence and anger and hatred of you know, heaps of people. And a lot of that falls on women who are the victims of that shit all the time.
It's crazy, man.
The only cure to that is to, you know, be good men to teach others how to follow down that path.
That's it. It's very interesting, bro. I think back to my relationships in the past and it's interesting, bro, because most, like for me, a lot of my trauma came from circumstances around my father not being there, which made me angry.
Yeah.
And therefore I trauma bond with women whose fathers weren't around either.
Yeah.
You know, and I've been in a couple toxic relationships where it's a hard one because you as a man, you're trying to help heal a woman whose pain comes from a man. You know what I mean? And, you know, they say that the pain in every woman's eyes is at the hands of another man, you know? The hard thing is, as a man, the pain in my eyes comes from a man too.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's such a fucking hard dynamic. And it's a hard thing to heal. But once again, you have to do the work yourself. You know, for me in the last year, I reconnected with my dad. He's on the other side of the world, but we went through our whole life together, relived it, re-talked it out, went through every moment to understand, these were the emotions I was going through at 3 years old. I can't remember those emotions, but I went through them at 3 years old and they became a part of my nervous system.
Yes.
Which then made me angry.
Yeah.
Permanently.
Yeah.
You know, and then you're angry permanently. You're walking around with a frown on your face. Someone goes, oi, what's your fucking problem? All of a sudden you're in a fight.
I don't know.
I don't know. I can't even remember. But all of a sudden you're in a fight, and then you've got another, and you get bashed, and then you've got another trauma to add on top of that.
Yeah.
And you're like, well, I got bashed because like I was angry. Yeah. And then like, and then all of a sudden you get into a relationship where you bond with someone over the trauma, and then that becomes toxic and traumatic. And then boof, another one. So let's say the original trauma, which is dad not being there, all of a sudden is at the bottom of your backpack of like, oh, and you got bashed, and your girlfriend, and all of a sudden you've got a full backpack, and you're fucking too heavy. And this is
and then you go, why am I so angry? You look in the backpack, and it's like, oh, because last week this happened. And it's like, no, it's actually because fucking 2 decades ago that happened, which kicked off all of this shit.
That's it.
And you're only looking at, oh, well, you know, if I didn't lose at the pokies last week, I wouldn't be so pissed off.
Exactly.
And it's like, no, this no, is this is because chain. This horrible thing happened to you that you can vaguely remember.
It's a long, long, long line of them, man. And this, when you go through trauma in any way, you are more susceptible to be like when you've been sexually abused.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, you are more susceptible to because you're a bit normalized to it.
Yeah.
And it's the same with like
hurt people, hurt
drugs,
people.
You know, like when I was like fucking very young and I was just smoking weed, I didn't realize, you know, when they say it's a gateway drug, well, it might not, let's say, you know, if you smoke a bit of weed, you're not going to get on heroin next week.
Yeah.
But all of a sudden, before you smoked weed, you might have been like, I'm never going to do drugs. And then you're like, oh, I've smoked a bit of weed. Fast forward 8 years, you're in a house with people with needles hanging out their arms. It's all, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
And I was so blessed that I still didn't go that far down it. But all of a sudden I got to a stage of like, oh, I've normalized this and allowed myself to keep normalizing it.
Yeah.
Until I'm in a situation that luckily enough is confronting enough for me to walk away.
You know, well, you see that all the time where like, where if you go out to a nightclub, and you drink alcohol, if you're a regular alcohol drinker, you're so say for me, I'm sober. I've never touched drugs, I've never drunk. So when I go out,
you're 30 now.
Yeah.
He did it. 30. Yeah. No drugs.
That's
no
crazy.
Alcohol. No cigarettes.
Bit of OxyContin.
And he's friends with me. A little bit of OxyContin during the fuck.
A little bit of OxyContin. A couple spoonfuls. A
couple of spoons of Oxy.
Yeah. But prescribe.
Prescribe.
Pharmaceutical. But like for me, when I go out, if I look at me versus my friends, when I go out, if I'm at a bar or a club, I'm saying no to alcohol. That's the thing that I have to say no to. All my friends who drink, because there's not even a consideration of a yes or no for alcohol, they're saying no to Coke. So it's like one night, maybe I'll drink. But one night, maybe they'll do Coke.
Yeah.
Now they're doing Coke. They like it. Now they're saying no to ice.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It's like, that's how I kind of look at the gateway thing of like, you start smoking weed, or before you smoke weed, you'll be saying no to cigarettes.
And it's the same.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. It's the same with all self-gratification.
Yeah.
You know, and this is why we're seeing what happening with Diddy and all these cunts. It's because that's it. They're like, all right, we'll have a bit of party, a bit of fucking loose orgy. And then all of a sudden,
sex can be like that. Yeah,
it's the same thing.
It can
man.
Be like that with food. I won't have dessert. Oh, now you have dessert every night. Oh, I won't have 2 desserts.
Exactly,
you know?
Man.
It's a creeping scale. That's why whenever people are often like, oh, it's so fucking amazing that you don't drink and you don't do drugs. I don't know how you've done that, but
they never did.
They're looking at it from the perspective of quitting. That's way harder than never starting.
Exactly.
In my view, I just had to not succumb to peer pressure, basically. And that, now that I'm 30, has completely left my life because everyone knows that I'm sober. I don't even get offered anymore, except by a stranger who has no sway over me.
Yeah.
And then they find out and they go, oh, he must have been a bad alcoholic. I'll never offer again, you know?
Whereas the people always say,
how have you done that? It's like, well, I never had to quit. I never started. Like, quitting is way harder than what I've done.
Well, yeah, the peer pressure in Australia around drinking is hectic. Like, I don't really drink very much now.
It was horrible when I was a teenager. Yeah. Like, I was heavily, heavily excluded from the ages of 16 to like 19 by people because I didn't drink, because they assumed that I would judge them, which is like that tall poppy syndrome. Oh, you want to do something? You think you're better than me? Yeah. Oh, you don't want to drink? You think I'm an alcoholic?
That's
and it's
so
like,
true.
No!
It's so true. Like, yeah, every time that I been put in a situation where someone's like, hey, man, we'll have a beer. And I'm like, I'm actually all good.
Yeah.
I really don't like the taste of it.
Yeah.
It doesn't, I do not get any bonus out of doing this. I'd actually rather drink water.
Yeah.
You know, and yeah, it's a reflection of like, oh, well, we can't be friends then. That's what, like, I feel like recently I met a guy and he's like, mate, well, why don't we go for a drink? And I was like, I'm all good, bro. I actually just released a new song. And he's like,
yeah.
Well, why don't you want to get pissed? And I'm like, I actually just want to chill out and do some more writing.
Yeah.
That's my celebration.
Yeah.
I just put out a song. I want to do some writing.
Yeah.
And he just was like really upset and a bit offended and hurt that I didn't want to drink with him. And I'm like, I'm sorry. Like,
yeah.
We're going to go to a pub where I have to yell over a loud environment to talk about whatever, like, yeah, while we do this, and then I wake up feeling a bit more shit. There's no prizes.
No, no.
You know, you can have some good loose times. You can have some fun. Don't get me wrong, with the right people, but
I've never, when I was younger, because I seriously was like, all right. Initially, it was just I'm gonna wait till I was 18, and then I saw what it did to all of my friends, and I just kind of I remember just sitting down. And I was like, I'm gonna, like, what's gonna happen if I start or if I don't start? And I was just like, well, I don't think I've ever seen someone's life improve by starting or get considerably better. Mm. I don't think I've ever heard of anyone going, thank fuck I drank my whole life, or thank goodness. Mm. Maybe there's a lot of that with weed. There's a lot of people who go, without weed, I wouldn't be as creative or whatever. There's a little bit of it with that.
No, same as that. You know, I think weed, it's God's creation. Once again, anything can be abused, but I feel that everything that we use in a healthy way that is a part of what's been here for thousands of years, there's a healthy way to use marijuana, there's a healthy way to use mushrooms, there's a healthy way to use DMT. In my experience, because once again, I grew up trying to experience all this sort of stuff, I took all the drugs. By the time I was 16, I remember, like, in my 16th year, I tried like 12 new drugs.
Wow.
A list in my head. I was like, I'm doing them all this year. You know what I mean? And what I've seen Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas. I want to try the suitcase.
Meanwhile, you know, when I was 16, I was like, oh, I reckon I can get all of the new 52 DC comics and I can finally understand the overarching story of the post-Flashpoint universe. That's the difference.
Our autisms just went neither way. Yeah. Yours are just like DC comics. Mine was like all the drugs.
Like, I'm going to have all the drugs. I wonder what the entire Bat family's up to right now.
I want to understand the overarching concept of all drugs put together. but man, like, and now I'm fucking 35 this year. And I'm having the same spiritual experiences that I used to get on DMT and mushrooms when I was a kid, now sober through God and through and channeling my energy, being in control of my vibrations and the frequencies that I'm trying to put out to the world in different ways. And
well, it's really interesting that, like, if you look at, like, Buddhist monks and all this kind of stuff, all those guys that talk about enlightenment through meditation, and then all of a sudden mushrooms kind of blow up and everyone's talking about enlightenment through psychedelics. And it's like, I can't remember who said it, but it was this really interesting Buddhist guy was just talking about, like, you guys are just taking a shortcut. Like, it's
exactly, it's
you guys are taking a shortcut to get to where I am temporarily. Yeah, but I'm here all the time because I climbed the mountain.
Ah, that's the fucking bars, man.
Yeah.
This is like, even recently.
Which was a little bit egotistical of the Buddhist monk.
Yeah, bless him.
I climbed the mountain. But you know, it's true.
But how's this right? Yeah. Like, only a few months ago, one of my good mates, who's also quite a spiritual fella, but he's not, like, hasn't accepted God in fully yet.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But he was like, I've got a big DMT, let's do it. And I was like, I don't really feel like I need to, but I love this guy. He's a good friend of mine.
Yeah.
And I have some DMT with you. And because I talk to God all day, every day. Like, my relationship with God is just growing rapidly more every moment of my life.
Mm.
And I feel the blessings, not only in my own healing, but the real world around me. Blessings are coming towards me. I feel more blessed right now. More than I've ever been in my fucking life, ever. And, like, it's crazy. And it's, I've got to thank God.
There's moments
where I feel guilty because I'm like, this is too good. How is this all happening right now?
Yeah.
It's impossible. I've really tried hard at a lot of other things and it always fell to pieces in my hand, like I was holding a broken glass together, but I was still cutting my hands and I was like, ah. bleeding. And I just let it go. I give it to God. And I just fucking focused on the love. And now it's come in. It's amazing. But yeah, so I was sitting there with my mate and he's like, all right, let's have some DMT. And so we both smoked some DMT and he kicked off. He smoked it first.
Yeah.
And then I smoked it and I kicked off a bit. But the whole time I was like, this is God. And like the whole DMT experience, which used to be like, oh, I saw this and experienced this and that. For me, it was just like, I was going to sit through this for a couple of minutes.
Mm.
And then like as I kind of came back to from the DMT trip and I saw the kaleidoscope universe that you kind of experience. But back when I was doing it without knowing God, I'd get messages from the other side.
Yeah.
But when I did DMT, now knowing God, because I get messages from God nearly every day, I get downloads. Like, I'll have moments where I'll be walking down the beach and God speaks to me so hard that I have to physically bow. Like, it's like, woof.
Yeah.
Like the universe, God, all that is one is feeding me. You know what I mean? And, yeah. It's really full on.
It is an interesting thing, like the as religion and spirituality and belief in God has plummeted, the popularity of all of these psychedelics and stuff have kind of skyrocketed.
Mm.
And all of these spiritual experiences that are not ascribed to any religion or whatever, not that they have to be.
Mm.
It's a really interesting thing of like, oh, have psychedelics exploded because people, I feel like humans just naturally need that spiritual experience. Like I think it's no coincidence that pretty much every single culture in the history of humankind has some kind of religion or cultural practice that involves elders or spirits or God or whatever.
Mm.
It's like seems to be such a natural thing that's ingrained into our DNA.
Whereas, at least in
like the Western world, atheism, the rise of atheism and like the fall of religion and all this kind of stuff where it's like you were crazy. I remember in high school, it was like, oh, fuck, he goes to church. That's fucking crazy. Mm. And when I started going to youth group to see what it was like, I was like, fuck, I don't know if I'm going to tell anyone because this is weird. What if they think I'm crazy? But it's like psychedelics and stuff kind of given like this socially acceptable spiritual experience.
Yeah.
And a lot of that has to do with the bad reputation that religion has given itself.
Well, and it's
because of the bigotry and the control and
it was the control.
All
so
that stuff.
If we go, like the word cult, cult is controlled with fear, which is what the church became.
Yes. Yeah.
Culture is built with leadership.
Yeah.
And in my experiences of growing up in the church, there was no leadership. It was control. It was fear. It was this. It was punishment. It was hell.
Mm.
That was the threat. You know what I mean?
It was like when those Buddhists showed up outside my show because I made fun of their guy.
They
tried to use fear to intimidate me into silence.
Yeah.
They showed up in my show. They were threatening violence, so many death threats, and they protested and tried to storm the venue.
Listen.
Using fear to try and control me, someone who's not even part
of
their
group. It's a hard position for a Buddhist to be in because you really checkmated them, bro.
Yeah, like, I know.
You fully just got them cornered, eh?
Yeah, the Buddhists are trying to kill me.
Yeah.
Read your book.
That's it. Like, I mean,
read your book.
Yeah, like, love protests are pretty interesting.
Yeah.
But yeah, so when I smoked this DMT on my mate, bro,
yeah.
He went out and then I smoked mine and I just chilled there and I kind of had the DMT experience that you have. But the whole time I was like, I know God.
Yeah.
I know God. Like in the past, there's no, you know, no one knows God. But when I say I know God, I know that I'm following God.
What I feel about it with God is I've always believed in a God and but I've never fully connected with any religion.
Mm.
I've gone to youth group. I've met lots of different. When I was really good, close friends with my friend Khaled, he's Muslim. I learned a lot about Islam. My mum's a hairdresser, all of her clients were Jewish. So I learned heaps about the Jewish religion. I've learned lots about the big three religions.
Mm.
And I've always, I even worked for years for a Coptic Christian, a guy who was a refugee from Egypt because the Muslims and the Coptic Christians there have beef. His church was burned down by people who hated his religion. Like, he was really persecuted for believing in God and had heaps of real big conversations about his version of Christianity, which was very different to the version of Christianity that I understood, which was very westernized. And I kind of got closest to what I felt was true with him. I was like, so I said something about heaven, and he goes, brother, that's not what happens in heaven. I was like, I can't wait to meet everyone when I, like, if I die, I would love to meet people who I loved. And he goes, that's not what happens. When you die, your spirit is going to change into something that you right now can't even understand because you're human. Yeah. And he goes, he says something like, we can't comprehend God because he is God. Mm. And I thought that made so much sense to me.
Yeah, that's it.
I was like, my thoughts on it is, I think that if we could comprehend God and understand exactly what he says, he wouldn't be God. It's something that's so much bigger.
Yeah.
That, like, an ant can't understand my motivations and what I want it to do, and or meet the idea of wanting anything or feelings. You know what I mean? It's completely out of its ability to understand. That's what I feel.
You're 100% about right. And God. This is where you have to give it
and
to God.
I feel like every religion has, like, the flavor and the sense you know, they get flashes of what the truth is, which is, you know, do unto others as you'd have done to you, and try to move with love and forgive people, and, you know, make it a nice experience for everyone.
Yeah, it's so interesting. The church, all this human control is the counterculture of what God is, you know, and...
Yeah, and everything else is noise and...
Yeah, yeah.
You know, like, the Bible is the King James Bible.
Yeah.
King James is a guy.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's gone, all right, I've made a few changes. This is my version of the Bible. And it's like...
Yeah, that's it. And there's, you know, it says in the Bible, the Spirit will write the Word of God on your heart. You don't need a Bible to find the Spirit of God. You know, all these different scriptures and all this sort of stuff that I've been using scripture in my life now to deal with a lot of different stuff. Scriptures help me understand. They give me confirmation. When I'm going through trials and tests and I feel like, oh, God, you're testing me here, and then I'll hear that scripture and I'm like, oh, no, that's right, I've got this. God's got me, you know. Like, when I say I know God, I know that I'm following God.
Mm.
I've had too many experiences in my life where I had to, like, give it to God, and God put me in the exact place that he needed to, you know. And when my mate came out of the DMT trip, he looked at me and he went, bro, what is it? And I just went, it's God, bro.
Yeah.
What you're trying to get to is God. But God is with you at all times. This is the thing, like, I spent so much of my life feeling lost, feeling suicidal, feeling like I didn't fit in, feeling misunderstood, feeling neglected, feeling abandoned, all the sorts of things. When I let God in, when I actually let God in, I drop my walls, I drop the trauma I had from the church, I drop the trauma I had from my upbringing, from my family breaking down, which all led back to religious ideology. And I let God in, I realized God had been there the whole fucking time, because it made me go through my whole life again and realize that every little pain and trauma and hardship that I had to go through was for me to be at this point now, to accept myself and love myself unconditionally with God. And that's how God's a cheeky motherfucker. You know what I mean? Like, God is the sense of humor in God. He'll fucking put you through the most crazy, ridiculous shit to bring you back and go, see? And you're like, oh, man, fuck.
Cheeky that's
you know what I mean?
It's the ultimate humbling experience. Like, I feel very similar about what I went through. I'm like, I'm the fucking shit. I'm going to make it. I'm the best.
Mm.
And then it was like you know, COVID, lockdown, foster a kid, get really sick, go through all of the surgeries all at the same time, all at once.
Mm.
And when I was in it, I was like, oh my God, this is fucking horrible. All of this stuff happening at once. This is so difficult. Fostering the child was a beautiful bit, but it was also difficult. I'm like, oh my God, all these things happening at once. What the fuck? I'm not going to make it through. And then I made it through. And then I was like, thank fuck it all happened at once, because all of those things took 2 years. If they happened one after the other, that would have been 8 years.
Oh, yeah.
Lockdown was 2 years. Surgery was 2 years. Fostering my boy was little over 2 years. And it's like, fuck, thank fuck that happened all at once.
The blessing, bro.
And now, because of all of that shit that I've been through and all the shit that you've been through, if you can figure out how to process it in a healthy way and look after yourself first and heal from it, you can, you get to keep, you get to do away with the suffering and put that away, but you get to keep all of the resilience forever. Like all of that pain and suffering that you go through can go in a box somewhere that you, that will come out every now and then, but it's not something that you always have with you. But the, that resilience, so that whenever, now when bad things happen, I go, fuck, I wrote a will when I went into my surgery. I'll be all right. You know, like I know what I can endure and survive and come out better on the other end. You know, like thank fuck I went through all that stuff, because how healthy am I now?
Yes, right
on. You know, you can see it, you can literally see it on my face that I've gone through all this stuff and have come out better. And that's the blessing of it. It's like you don't know how strong you are until you're tested. You know, a weak man is someone who's never been tested. How do you know how strong you are until something happens?
Exactly.
You've got no fucking idea.
This is where trauma can be a positive thing.
Yeah, and the other thing, the positive, that's the first step, is like figuring it out and healing yourself and moving through it and processing it. When that's done, then you can make the decision to kind of help other people through that by being an example. And I kind of look at it with me. I'm like, oh, I'm actually like, I was actually explaining it to, I was talking about it with my son. I was like, now that you've kind of, you've gone through these things and you've come out on the other side a lot better and you've healed a lot, you can actually, you can't fix anyone else and you can't save anyone else. That's something that you can often destroy yourself trying to fix somebody else.
Oh, yeah.
What you can do for other people that are struggling, when you've been through similar stuff and come out the other end okay, you can be a safe place that they can visit. You can be a safe place they can visit, and you can kind of grab them and go, it's all right, and let them let it out, and then just pick them up, turn them around, and push them in the direction that they have to. They have to decide to walk.
Yeah.
And many of them won't. And if you stay behind them, pushing them down the path, you'll end up walking backwards down to the hurt place that they're stuck in.
Oh, yeah.
But you can, you know, that, and that to me is like, is being a good man, is being a positive example and being like, you know, I've gone through these things. Here's some love. You can do it as well. And the amount of harm and damage that you can heal, and through that prevent harm and damage being done to other people, because that's what hurt people do. It's like unfathomable. Save one person. Who knows how many people that you've prevented harm to?
It's an interesting one.
Not that every hurt person ends up becoming an evil monster. No, but it's you a know? Hard one.
Like I'm gonna just fuck it. I've ran into this guy probably like 6 months ago. He was trying to sell drugs to 12-year-olds in the mall. And I got triggered and I slapped him. And I told him to fuck off. And because, he was trying to sell fucking Lyrica, which is an extreme nerve pain damage drug
to right.
kids in the mall.
Fuck.
And I know these kids. I know their dad and know their uncles from my time away. You know what I mean? So when, and I've known this fellow since he was quite young too, but he's an adult now, and he was there trying to sell drugs to kids, and it triggered me, and I slapped him and told him to fuck off. And now this guy is like, he's hurt from it, and he's like carrying on every day and trying to like throw dark energy back at me. And I refuse to give back into it. There's an element of like, I regret. Because I do a lot of good shit, but that was a moment where I was like, fucked up, I slipped, and boof, I let a bit of negative energy out, you know? And it's very interesting to analyze in hindsight.
Well, a healed person is not a perfect person.
No, exactly.
There is no such thing as like completely fixed.
No, that's it. And there's no such thing as your ego completely dying. It's always going to be there. You have to kind of, you know, always fight back with it. But, And I ended up reaching out to this guy, and I tried to be like, look, man, this is what happened. This is why I did what I did. You know? I wish you all the best. It's time for you to put this energy down and, you know, your pain in regards to the way you're reacting to this situation is duly noted. But I'm not going to allow you to work me up to continue this, because that's what he's trying to do. He's trying to, like, poke me more and more to get more of a reaction. And God's given me the patience to just, like, fucking stand away from him. But it's very interesting, man. The more I, like, navigate this journey, navigate the world that I'm in, also just navigating my emotional response to it, because, you know, understanding where I sit on the spectrum, how I hyper-focus, how much I absorb the world around me, you know, like, that week also when I made that action, it was because, as well, I was, like, hyper-focusing on Palestine, I was hyper-focusing on a lot of shit, and I was carrying all this pain, then all of a sudden, this one moment just fucking all of it came out, you know?
Yeah.
But for me, like, I've made mistakes, you know, and I think this is, you know, being a good man is the best thing that we can do. Not only, like, in regards to how we try to help other young men understand themselves.
Yeah.
How we help the people around us understand ourselves, how we treat women is a massive aspect to it. You know, I know there's so much fucking tribalism in regards to, feminism.
Men and women are not fucking teams. Like, that's the thing that shits me with all of this, like, feminism and anti-feminism and all this kind of stuff. It's like, and most of this, I think, is on the male side of things. You know, I'm fucking doing team stuff. But, like, you always see shit like, oh, women want this and women will only respect you if you do this. And it's like, are you generalizing half the fucking population?
Yeah, so stupid.
Like, that's and it's all these people that have hypothetical arguments with invented feminists that they've seen on Twitter that don't exist in real life.
Yeah.
And they're applying that to real life.
Mm.
And it's because they don't have a fucking genuine relationship or a connection or any type of communication with women
in
general.
It's the same with people that were, like, skitzing about gay marriage. Do you know any gay people? No.
Yeah.
Like, you know, same deal with racism.
Yeah.
Do you know any black people? No.
Yeah.
You know, like, look at the referendum last year. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
You even have people that don't know, like, fuck, man. It's just crazy, bro. We are in such like a virtual signaling carry-on. And this is why America's on edge. This is why everyone's so fucking angry, is because this tribalism war of labels that we've evolved to at this point of society. We've evolved so many labels. How many boxes can you fit in?
Yeah.
We can give you 12 precursory titles before you even get your main title of what you are in this day and age.
Yeah.
You know, like, even like Spanian, is he a Christian? Is he... I see him being a good man in the real world.
Yeah.
That's what we did that day.
Yeah.
We went out, we showed kindness, we tried to talk to people, made them feel heard, and it was fucking uplifting.
Yeah.
You know, after we left this area, there was a confrontation between some youth and a cop, and a couple cop cars got smashed up.
Yeah.
We were nowhere near those cop cars, but we're being blamed for it.
Yeah.
You know, the cops arrested Spanion, they went through his phone. They went through his conversations with me on Instagram.
Yeah.
The Tasmanian police were literally hacking Spanion's phone, going through our yarns to see if I'd help him incite this shit. And all they heard was me going, yeah, bro, can't wait to see you and tell you all the stuff I know about Tassie, you know. And
by the way, what a fucking stupid idea for a video that would be. Hey, man, come down to Tasmania. Let's start a riot.
Oh, man. But
why the fuck would you do that?
This is like, and bless your Tasmanian police, but you just made it worse.
Yeah.
If you guys never rocked up,
100%,
there wouldn't have been any cop cars smashed.
Yeah.
If you didn't arrest Spanion, everyone wouldn't be going on about it. You guys gave us free promotion, Tasmania police.
Yeah.
I hope you understand this. If you guys want to run down Spanion and what he does and go, oh, well, this isn't acceptable, all of you carrying on.
Yeah.
Has promoted it heaps more.
Creating the adversarial energy. I mean, even like,
You're doing the work for us.
Absolutely. Like, I remember, I mean, this goes years back. I remember when I had, like, a bunch of fans show up to, like, the Janoskians thing. Mm. The cops showed up as well, and they were looking for a reason to arrest me. They wanted to arrest me. They were so upset. Mm. I was there making sure the entire crowd was mellow, keeping our crowd separate from the other crowd. People would like whisper about throwing shit. I say, do not throw shit. We're not going to fucking throw anything. I was keeping it all nice and mellow. Then the cops just picked a random reason to arrest me. I touched a sign that had a penis on it. So they arrest me for being, it wasn't my sign. I signed it for someone else's. I was in possession of offensive material is what they said.
Yeah.
They arrested me for that. Guess what? As soon as I was gone, it fucking went off because the cops took the de-escalator, me, out of the situation and then escalated the fuck out of it. Mm. 150 cops show up. It turned into a fucking riot because they showed up.
Yeah, man. That's exactly what happened.
And not because they showed up, because they showed up with that energy. If they had 100 guys off to the side and a few guys came up, had a chat to me, hey, man, here's the rules. Can you work with us to keep this safe? That would have been the best thing. Mm. If the cops went up to you and Spanny and were like, hey, mate, can we do this? Can you help us do that? You would have helped.
Oh, we did. Well, like, so when the cops got there, one of the cops knew who I was and he was like, oh, come on, Greeley. And I was like, yeah, man, we're just cruising through, bro. We're out. We're not sticking around. And he goes, well, good, because the cavalry's on the way. And we're like, okay. And at that point, we told people to chill out.
Yeah.
We told people to stop following us.
Yeah.
We took a shortcut and we went up over the hill through the bush.
Yeah.
So shit was getting a bit hectic right at the shops there where we first arrived in Gagebrook. And then we went and the cops rocked up and we went, no worries. Hey, guys, we got a crook. Like, shh. And we try to calm people down. And people are just there following us like, rah, 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 just try. And we're like, yeah, we're trying to make a vlog. You know what I mean? And we've gone through and ducked over the hill.
It's so funny, all of that for what is essentially a vlog filmed on a GoPro.
Yeah, it's all it was. It's crazy.
Yeah.
But, and then, we get to the other side of the hill and we're walking down and that's when someone come up and goes, oh, I heard they just smashed a cop car, you know.
Yeah.
Mind you, the night before this all happened in Tasmania, there was a death in custody under Tasmania's police watch.
Yeah.
And right now, you know, everyone's up in arms about Spanion and Greeley fucking doing this and, you know, I'm copping a lot of people, fuck you, Greeley, you just do this for that, blah, 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 blah. Because a couple cop cars got smashed up.
Yeah.
When someone died in police custody and no one is questioning it. What's more important, human life or a bunch of government paid for cars? Like, it's I'm not trying to just deflect and take the attention away from what the drama was that was a result of us being in the area after we left. I'm not going to deny that that is somewhat linked, you know. But once again, like, you look at every – Spanier said it well. You look at every fight at every football game, which there's plenty. You know, I've been in Melbourne after an AFL game. There's a lot of damage that gets caused from drunk AFL fans. Yeah. Heaps. Yeah. We've seen it over the years.
Yeah.
They don't blame the football.
No.
You know what I mean? Like, they still have the football next year.
Yeah.
You know? And that's the thing. You can't, like, I know the cops in Tassie have given Spanion some crazy sort of rules of what he can and can't do when he's back in Tasmania and all sorts of shit, which just proves how much they're trying to cover shit up as well. Like, it's just all, it's all very interesting. But I tell you what. All I say in my
world. It is pretty crazy for a guy from a lower socioeconomic background going back into those areas, a guy who's created a positive outcome from being born and you know, negatively influenced by that environment, to go in there and tell the story of people who are currently there and show how people live. And what he's not going in there and being like, look at these yucky paws. No. This is fucked. What he's actually doing is he's showing how people live and often going, I can't believe they let people live like this in government housing.
Mm.
Look how fucked these flats are that single mums are supposed to live in. Mm. This doesn't look very safe. And he's pointing out how dilapidated and neglected a lot of areas in Australia are, it's very interesting that the police are upset at poor people finally getting a little bit of a megaphone to talk about how they live currently.
Yeah, yeah. It's very interesting. And this is also what he's doing, that once again, people forget. Let's say you're 8 years old and you don't really know too much about the world. You're eight. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But all you know is everyone's like, Spanion's coming, Spanion's here.
Yeah.
And you're like, whoa, who's Spanion? This guy must be pretty fucking amazing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Everyone's going on about him. Oh, look how happy my older brother is. Look how happy, you know.
Yeah.
Wow, this is cool. Who's Spanion? So you come out of the house and you see this guy walking through the street with everyone following him. And everyone's, you know, let's say they're doing burnouts. Let's say they're doing shit, which is excitement in that world. Yeah. It's like, well, what do I like to do? I like to go to summer nights, or I like to go to, you know, the races. That's what I did as a kid. We went to the derby, you know, like fucking. And so you see all this stuff, and then you're like, all right, when I get Instagram, I'm going to follow Spanion. What does this guy do? And you're like, oh, he goes to church. He goes to the gym. He doesn't take drugs. He doesn't drink. He doesn't promote misogyny. He's a married man. It's a fucking pretty good role model.
He talks about how he used to do crime, and he learned better, and now he does not, and crime exactly. is putrid, lad.
Yeah, it's putrid, lad. And the fact is,
that's exactly the type of fucking role. I mean, that's why all of the best social workers are ex-crims or people who have been through abuse themselves.
Yeah, because people need to relate to people to understand.
Yeah.
No one can ever become someone that they don't relate to. It's just, you know, it's not, what's the point? Like, it's, and you know, this is what I try and do with everyone I talk to, from when I chill with Kane to, you know, to everyone. I try and find exactly where I relate to them, you know, and what point.
Because who else, like, if these kids with no dads who are surrounded by a lot of negative influence, and there's no fucking opportunities, and there's no pool where they can go swim, and they demolish the skate park, you know, who are they going to relate to? The police officer?
Spanion.
You know?
That's who they're going to relate to.
That's what they
and
need.
And then, honestly,
how much time do we have on the card, Keelan? Sorry?
We have 30 minutes left.
Okay, good. Yeah, we're good.
Yeah. And, so bringing it all back to everything we're talking about, you know, it's very important in this world to be a good man. You know, I said in the vlog with Spanion, I go, you do good as fucking all scared because you work in your jobs. And that upset a lot of people.
Yeah.
But you have to understand my experience. I've been through a lot of situations, even just recently. Like, I was walking through Hobart Mall. There was a young, like, 15-year-old girl sitting on the pavement, profusely bleeding out her hands. Like, she was trying to cover the blood up and hide it. And I saw her. I looked around. There was, like, six people in suits that had just knocked off work.
Yeah.
Well aware of the fact that this girl is bleeding profusely on the ground. And all of them are ignoring her.
And that's this is what I'm talking about. I've got a story about this after this as well. This is what I'm talking about. The difference, like, a good man is not a person who does not cause harm. A good man is a person who actively decides to do good things. And when you're presented with opportunities. So this girl, this is not just you, everyone walking past her, this girl is that opportunity presenting itself to especially men to do good and be good, to help.
100%, you know. And
those men aren't causing harm by walking past her necessarily. Kind of they are.
Yeah.
But they're not, they're not looking at her and going, I'm not going to help her. They're not going, fuck her, I don't care. So they're not being maliciously harmful, but they're not even, many of them are not even seeing the opportunity to help.
And that's the thing. And like, when I saw her and I realized, I went, fuck, you know, and like, man, like, I luckily had my bag.
Yeah.
I had a spare t-shirt. I had some Betadine. Like, I tried to do what I could. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But that's what I analyzed afterwards. I'm like, why isn't anyone else helping? And I sat there and, like, blatantly stared at one bloke in a suit who was there, like, looking on his phone and just doing everything he could to ignore the situation while he waited for the bus to get home from work. I can't help but blame the fact that people are so worried about their A to B, them going to work, I need to do this to go here, and I haven't got enough time to risk possibly allowing this into my life. Because humans are so enslaved in their own worries especially in a country where the cost of living is ridiculous.
Yeah.
That's the other thing I think, and it's like if that had happened in a poorer country, someone would have helped us straight away. But everyone's so terrified about the cost of living. Well, I've got to go to work and Band-Aids cost me this much, so I can't even spare a Band-Aid for her. Come on, darling, don't you know about the price of living in Australia? What are you doing bleeding on the ground? You know what I mean? Like, it's
and I can't a lot of her. a lot of a more empathetic view of that as well is that there are so many it is so hard to help other people when you're fucking drowning yourself as well.
Yeah.
There is that. And then there's also the bystander effect too, which is super fucking powerful in and of itself, where it's which is why I talk about making the active decision to be a good man, because bystander effect is so fucking powerful. So where they've done experiments to prove it, where they've had people in a doctor's office waiting for their appointment, and they've had one person who doesn't know they're part of an experiment, everyone else is an actor, they'll put smoke coming out of a door, and if everyone leaves the room, the guy that doesn't know they're part of the experiment will, but if everyone else acts super normal, six other people, there's an obvious fire in the room, that person who is not an actor, surrounded by actors who are acting calm, will sit there and be like, well, no one else is panicking, I guess I won't leave the room.
Oh, bro.
And in real life, that guy burns to death because he doesn't want to look weird.
Oh, man. How's this? A couple months ago, I was on the bus going to Launceston to do a grill talk show, and this fella on the bus projectile vomited everywhere.
Yeah.
And the whole bus stunk out with the worst Parmesan cheese smell of spew. It was fucking horrible. And everyone, out of fear of standing out, was saying nothing. Everyone's just there dying. trying not to throw up as well. I looked around, I was like, well, obviously, I have to practice my authority in this situation. Yeah. Driver, blah, 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 let's pull over up here, blah, 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 blah. Everyone's just looking at me like, thank you. And I looked at them like, would you rather suffer in the depths of the essence of this guy's vomit until you fucking vomit all that, and the chain reaction takes over the whole bus rather than just standing out and going, hey, driver, someone's thrown up, we need to pull over.
I think it's often in public, it's just a freeze response.
Yeah.
Like people aren't deciding not to do anything, and they're not deciding to do something either. They're just stuck in between, and the effect is nothing is done.
Bless them.
and that's like I remember, it's something that I will probably talk about later, but something fucking horrible happened to someone that I loved, and I was very like overwhelmed with the world is cruel, the world is fucked, I don't know how to respond to this. And eventually I got to, well, the this great quote in like this I had been years about a year earlier, I'd been reading a lot of Stoic philosophy, and one of my favorite quotes was, the best revenge is to not be like that. And I was like, well, what is the opposite of this thing? And the opposite of this is to be a good man, because if there was a good man in that situation, this horrible thing would not have happened. And I'm writing, because I write in my journal, I'm writing about this, I'm like, I'm going to respond, and I'm going to be a good man, and that's how I'm going to respond to this. And then, like, on the way home from where I was riding, literally it's a 5 to 7 minute walk. We just did it today. It's like 5 minutes. There's this young man off his head on, I don't even know what, some kind of drug. He's wandering up and down the street going, bashing into front fences, like drooling, freaking out. I'm with the dog. And maybe a year ago, I would go, I'm sick, I got my own bullshit, whatever, I'm going home. But in this scenario, I was like, I've just written down, I'm going to be a good man. And God goes, fucking prove it.
Yeah.
And then puts me in the path of this young man. People are leaving their house, watching him. No one's doing anything. And then I put the dog away. And then I just start following him down the street. And I call an ambulance for the guy. And I'm following him down the street because he doesn't even know where the fuck he's going. I'm keeping a very safe distance because that's a really, really, really important thing, is if you intervene in these types of things, you must be safe. Yeah. This is not something I would ever recommend for women to do ever. This is a man's job. And even when you are a man, I'm huge. I'm 6'8". I'm a very dangerous person. I'm always looking at situations like this.
You have to put your safety first. And I've put myself in some very dangerous situations, but the more I close, and this is like with God as well. Like when you say a good man, you take out the O, then it's God man. You know what I mean? A good man is a man that walks with God.
Mm.
And that's where God will put you in these positions. But you got to also remember God is about putting yourself first. Safe way, you have to be mindful of that.
Yes, yes, because these things can be fucking dangerous, for sure.
It can be very dangerous.
And I'm following this guy, and then I, following him for a little bit, he turns around, and then I notice this car does a U-turn, and I see this woman in the car following him as well.
Mm.
And she's just driving behind him slowly, and I walk up to her window. I'm like, is this your son?
Mm.
And she goes, no, but I have sons. And she's like, no one's helping him. And she starts crying. And because she sees what I see, which is a whole street of just people looking at this dude who needs help. Mm. I just go, I'm helping. Mm. And then I'm like, can I get in your car? Cause now I'm fucking worried about this woman. And then I'm thinking, shit, now she probably shouldn't even let me in her car either, because who am I?
Mm.
So I go, I live in this house. This is my name. I just put my dog in. There's my dog. That's where I live. Can I stay with you while we follow this guy?
Mm.
And I end up walking with her. I ended up having to get out of the car and I helped this dude get home. He was trying to walk home. What happened was he was on a building site with these laborers who gave him drugs. He didn't know what it was. He took way too much. And then they fucked off and abandoned him because they were worried about getting in trouble.
Shit men.
In fact, they
bunch of shit men.
They were following this woman to see if she would call the cops or whatever. And then they followed her the whole time.
The tradies.
So, yeah. Yeah.
Shit men.
Yeah.
The worst men.
Yes. Yeah. So
trash.
Then,
shame.
So then we call the cops, and this guy gets home, and I make sure he gets into his house. We stress to the police. He's not dangerous. He's just off his head. He gets the help that he needs. This woman gets to go home safe, and I go home, and I had a big cry.
Mm.
And that's like, that's...
It's a blessing, bro.
Yeah, it is. And that's like, oh, man, I actually really helped. I was safe. I made sure that it wasn't going to harm me. I didn't go in to completely fix this man's life.
Mm.
You know, I got him home safe. I got him access to some resources. I gave a statement to the cops about these other people, and this woman didn't have to do that by herself because that could have been potentially dangerous for her. I got to be a good man. I went home. I had a big cry, and I was like, that's what it is.
It's a blessing, man. It's
when you're presented with an opportunity to do good, when it's safe to do so, you must.
Oh, yeah.
Because there are so many men out there that cause this harm and commit these horrible acts. And if good men were around, or if good men influenced those men who harm when they were younger, they maybe never would have gotten to a position where they were harming.
Yeah, we have to learn how to transfer our energy. Mm. This is a hard thing. When we go through domestic violence, all these things that people go through when they're young, and then they replicate this behavior, these learned behaviors, you know. We have to figure out ways that we can transfer the energy and not carry it ourselves. All the times that I was violent and I was a bad man, I was a shit man, was because I wasn't taking accountability for the energy I was carrying and finding healthier outlets to process it. You know, and that negative charge, like even bare feet on the ground, can be a thing that takes that negative charge out. I think back to the years when I was angry. I never put my bare feet on the ground. I just carried this negative charge until it came out in my fists. You know what I mean? Yeah. And like, it's so easy to understand once you do that journey and continue to do it, man. Like, God's so blessed, man. Like, I had a fan, a big supporter of my music, that committed suicide about 4 years ago, and I was one of the last people to speak to him and try to talk him out of it. And then on Easter Saturday, while I was living in Melbourne, I prayed and I went for a walk, and I ended up coming across a gang of kids in the middle of a park in Coburg. And coincidentally, one of the kids was the son of this supporter of mine from Tasmania that committed suicide 4 years ago.
Wow. And
at that point, as soon as this kid came over, he said, "Are you Greeley?" He said, "You know my dad." As soon as he said his dad's name, God was just like, this is your job. You have to be a good man. You know what I mean? And so I just sat down with the young fella.
It's a decision that you make.
Yeah, yeah.
Because you could have gone, yeah, I am, mate. Thanks. Nice to meet you. See you later.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And, you know.
And that wouldn't have been an evil act to do. But you were presented with the opportunity to be a good man.
Yeah. And I gave that young fella everything that I could just in regards to, told him all the memories I had of his father. Talked to him about grief, talked to him about healing, talked to him about God, talked to him about, he's 15, he's on the streets at the moment, he just joined a gang. He's just going through it all, you know, yeah. And his dad's not around.
Mm.
And I was one of the last few people to speak to his dad, and his dad supported me, gave me a lot of good energy. And that's where, like, as soon as God showed me, like, I put you in this part, like, the odds are impossible.
Your voice would have been in this kid's house.
100%.
Because of your music.
They grew up listening to me, you know. Yeah. And then all of a sudden, God put me in this place to be a good man and give that young fella everything I knew, you know, and to transfer some of the energy that I was still carrying from his dad. His dad had transferred good energy onto me. His dad was no longer around. I'm still carrying good energy from his dad, so I had to give that good energy to him.
Yeah.
You know, and when I walked out of that park, man, I cried. Not because I was sad, not because it was emotionally confronting, not because of that, because of the blessing.
Yeah.
The same reason you cried when you got home that day after,
yeah,
you know, the situation with that fella in the street, man. And this is what we've got to keep doing. It's the only way that we can contribute to this world of so much pain and so much anger. Everyone's lying. Everyone's trying to be something they're not. You know, like I talk to these 16-year-old kids that they're in the hip-hop scene and they're so refreshed that I just fucking talk so transparently with them. Because all the other adults are lying to them. Yeah. But the kids can see what's all happening on the internet. Yeah. They know what's going on. They're like, we're aware of the chaos, but you're all just pretending to be normal.
Yeah.
Just be honest.
Yes.
You know, and I think that's really where it's at. The more that we can just break down these walls to be purely honest. God bless, man.
Yeah.
Mm.
That's it. I think that's a probably good spot to end it.
Yeah. What a journey, man.
I think the main thing that I've said it a few times is I feel like, not all the time, but you are in your life, you are presented with opportunities to make the good decision and make the good act. I think the more present you are in right now and aware of your surroundings, you will start to notice opportunities to do small things. Yeah. Some of them, rarely they're huge things that you can do, or they're small things that have giant impacts. Mm. And the more present you are, and also the more you have the agency and the knowledge that you actually can do good things in real life spontaneously as the opportunity presents itself.
Oh, just being nice to the lady at the shop.
100%.
You know, I saw this lovely lady in the shop down in Tassie before I left, and she's always so nice and everyone ignores her. And I just went up to her and I went, hey, darling, I really appreciate how much good energy you put out there. And I know you don't always get back, but just know it's appreciated. She fully just froze up and started to cry, bless her, because she's like, no one's ever said anything like that to me.
It's something I've started doing.
Yeah, 10 seconds out of my day to make a fucking world of difference in someone's life. And I've worked behind a cash register. People are rude.
Yeah.
Be a good person. Do good shit. Give love to the world. Find God. God is that unconditional love that even when shit is fucking terrible. Like I was in prison getting strip searched, still being kind to the cunts that are looking in my ass. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Fucking why not?
Well, you'd want to be.
Yeah, you want to be. No, but why not? Like, why not throw that fucking spanner in the works?
Yeah.
You know, people don't know. Like, this is where, like.
Don't fart.
Yeah. Yeah. But, like cops. Like, I see cops in the street. Yeah. And, man, like, 2 days after the Spanion vlog, I'm walking through the Hobart Mall. 12 cops walk by and they go, grills? I was like, what the fuck? You guys were just searching through my Instagram 2 days ago. You bunch of weirdos. Because like, I see them at Christmas. I go, Merry Christmas, officers. They go, wait, what?
Yeah.
I said, Merry Christmas. So, oh, okay. And then they just drive off like,
who knows the...
You've got no social skills. This is the thing. If you're going to become a cop or a police officer, learn how to socialize. Don't learn how to use a gun. Learn how to socialize. Learn how to use your heart and your mind to survive. I've traveled the country. I've worked in the fucking worst detention centers. I've been to every fucking hood in this country, been around, never needed a gun, never needed a knife, because I have my mind and I have my heart and I know how to talk.
Yeah.
So that's what you just need to do. Just learn how to actually fucking communicate with the world around you through this frequency, not through this frequency of, oh, control, you've got me vest on, I've got all me little gadgets to fucking make yourself look scary enough to pretend I'm not scared. Because, fuck, I just see fear in their eyes.
Like, unfortunately, all those fucking loony little hippies are right. And unfortunately, the answer is love.
It is.
All of this bullshit.
It is, yeah, yeah.
When often the natural reaction is just hate and anger.
Yeah.
And often that's an unavoidable reaction when things happen in the moment.
Oh, yeah.
But you have to take it apart and process it and be like, you know what? Maybe this wouldn't have happened if everyone was a little bit fucking nicer.
And that's the difference between reacting and responding.
Yeah.
It's when you react, it's the first instinct. Yeah. That's your trauma.
And you can feel all of those things. Yeah, you just don't have to act on them.
Well, that's it. Reactions come from trauma. React. Yeah. It's that kind of hard setting. It's our frontal lobe that helps us respond. So instead of moving with this, that reaction, think with this, respond. It's the answers.
All right. That's it.
Love you guys. Love you, Lewis.
Yeah, love you too, buddy.
Fucking yeah. Yeah, 2024, let's go. We've leveled up.
Yeah.
God's in. Who would have thought a few years ago me and Lewis would be here talking about God? Come on, we've gone through some hard fucking years of atheism. You know, we've gone through it all.
Yeah.
And here we are. The answer is we're not trying to be religious. We're not trying to fucking, not trying to do nothing. We're trying to love ourselves and give love to the world in the best way that we can. And I'm so grateful for our unconditional love of friendship, bro. Because God has been in our friendship the whole time.
Yes.
Through all the ups and downs.
Alhamdulillah, my brother.
That's it, my brother. God bless.
All right. Have a shit one. Bye.
Bye. All right. Have a shit one at the end. Like.